Hello, everyone.
Hi.
It is a wonderful thing to be here during the days of unleavened bread. I like to tell you what I'm going to tell you and then tell it to you. So, the title of the message that I have for today is Lessons from the Wrestling Match. Lessons from the Wrestling Match. And it's plural, lessons, more than one. And what wrestling match is this? Well, it's not anything like what you see on the television today if you look at the television and look at wrestling matches. When I was a child, children take after their parents. And my father used to like to see wrestling matches on television. And I was there in the living room when the TV was on. And I saw those wrestling matches too. And they often had a clean wrestler matched with someone who was not clean. And when the referee was looking the other way, the dirty wrestler would do some illegal things in the wrestling match. And so I was used to growing up seeing all of these wrestling matches that my father watched. However, when I was 19 years old, I decided that TV was taking up too much of my time. And so I gave up television when I was 19. I did not know if I could do it because I was so hooked on the television. And I said, I'm going to see if I can manage for just 1 week to do away with the television. And so I managed to do it. And at the end of that week, I said, I wonder if I can do it for another week. And I did. And I said, maybe one more week. And after 3 weeks of not watching any television, I said, you know, I can do it. And I quit watching TV from that point on. And so that was a good thing in my life at the age of 19, giving up television. But I still remember those wrestling matches. And I would like to begin with the wrestling match mentioned in the title of the sermon. And it begins in Genesis 32, verse 24. And that wrestling match, I have gone to the Hebrew and given a literal translation that brings out its meaning. There's only a few places where it differs from the standard translation. Looking at Brown Driver Briggs' lexicon and comparing shades of meaning of certain words. So this is my careful translation of the wrestling match. And we're going to talk about it. I'm going to read it through without making a whole lot of comment. And then I'm going to start discussing and bring out some things that I didn't realize myself the first time I read this. Now, there was one thing that I do want to begin as a preface to the wrestling match. It's a wrestling match between Jacob and God. And the reason we know that it's a wrestling match between Jacob and God is because of what it says in verse 30. I'm going to read verse 30 first, and then I'm going to begin from the verse 24, where it begins. In verse 30, it says, then Jacob called the name of the place Peniel. Now, the word Peniel means face of God, or face of the Almighty. So face of God is what Peniel means. Peni means face, and El is Elohim, it's a singular part of Elohim, and it means God. So it means face of God. Then Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, for I saw God face to face, and my life is spared. And so we know that he was wrestling with God. He finally recognized it. Evidently, it was revealed to him by the circumstance. And so I want to begin now in verse 24, because I want to point out when it says a man in the text, it's referring to God. And Jacob did not know it was God. He didn't know it. So let's now begin the story in verse 24. And Jacob was left alone. And a man, and this man is God, wrestled with him until the rising of the dawn. Until the rising of the dawn. And so it was evidently a good deal of the night. It doesn't tell the exact point in time that the wrestling match began. but it certainly began long before the rising of the dawn. So it was a multi-hour wrestling match. I'm going to say more about that a little later. Until the breaking of the dawn, when the man, when he refers to the man, God, perceived that he did not attain a defeat over him, and when, you know, nothing, no one in this universe is stronger than God. So it's simply that he was toying with him. He could have crushed Jacob instantly if he wanted to, but he didn't want to. The whole thing was a test. It was a whole test on Jacob. So he did not attain a defeat over him, over Jacob. He, the man, injured. And the words in the King James touched, there, it has a lot of connotations, that word in the Hebrew, and it really means injured. He injured the socket of Jacob's thigh as he wrestled with him. So that's a very interesting thing. We're going to discuss why he did that a little bit later. Why did he injure Jacob's thigh? Then he, the man, said to Jacob, "Let me go, because the dawn is rising." The dawn is rising. But he, Jacob, said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." And that's an interesting statement. And evidently, he allowed Jacob to imagine that Jacob was so strong that he had the power to hold on to him. He was pretending the whole time, toying with him, so to speak. Because God is so powerful, he can do anything he wanted. He can create things and so forth. And so Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." In verse 27, then he, the man, God, said to him, "What is your name?" Then he said, "Jacob." Then the man, God, said to him, "Your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but now Israel." Later on, we're going to discuss the meaning of Israel. "For your perseverance, your perseverance with God and with man has, and you have persevered, excuse me, I didn't say it, for you have persevered with God and with man and endured. And so that was a character trait that he was telling Jacob that he had, endurance. He had endurance. That was a good thing. That was a good thing, his endurance. Then Jacob asked and said, "Tell me now, what is your name?" You know, he put it back on him. He asked one what your name was. He already knew what his name was, but he had to bring out a certain thing. And so Jacob wanted to know who he was wrestling with. She said, "What is your name?" Now, the word name just doesn't mean necessarily a pronunciation. It really primarily doesn't mean that. It means your essence, your character, who you are. Identify yourself. Now, the interesting thing about saying that is that it shows that when they began the wrestling match, Jacob didn't know who the man was. Can you imagine, if you met somebody and they you didn't know the person and walked up to you and said, "Let's have a wrestling match," you would think twice. Now, maybe this guy is a very, very, very good wrestler. Would I want to take a chance wrestling with somebody I didn't know? And we're going to talk about that a little bit later. This is a very interesting thing here. And so Jacob asked and said, "Tell me now, what is your name?" In other words, who are you? What do you like? What are you doing here? How did you come to meet me? He's asking, what's your character? What do you like? Who are you? Then he replied, "Why do you ask for my name, my character, who I am?" Then God, he blessed him, Jacob, there. He blessed him. Now, then Jacob called the name of the place Peniel. Now, the blessing was in terms of his name. In other words, he asked to be blessed. He was blessed. And the blessing was his name, Israel, and what it means. That's the blessing, is what the word Israel means, which we will talk about a little bit later. I'm going to save that here for a while. So, verse 30 then Jacob called the name of the place, Peniel, it means face of God. For I saw God face to face, and my life was spared. So, in that whole incident, Jacob had recognized one thing. He recognized that there is a reason why the rising of the dawn was a point at which this individual that he was wrestling with needed to go. And there are other incidents in the scripture that we could find in which people believed that they could not look upon God and live. They could not look upon God and live. And he knew, because this person was becoming light, and he knew this individual did not want Jacob to see him when it was light. And Jacob perceived that's the reason why he wants to go, because it's becoming light. In other words, I cannot look upon God and live. And so he knew that way that he was wrestling with God, because he knew that if he saw God, he would die. That's what he believed. But he recognized there was enough light that he actually did see him, and yet his life was spared at the end of verse 30. So he knew he was wrestling with God. Then it says in verse 31, then the sun rose upon him when he passed Peniel, limping upon his hip. In other words, the injury that he got was such that he was limping. He no longer had the feeling of well-being, from that point on in his life, because of the injury that he got in the wrestling match. Verse 32, therefore the children of Israel do not eat the sinew of the hip that is upon the socket of the thigh to this day, because he injured the socket of Jacob's thigh on the sinew of the hip. See, he didn't have any chiropractor over there to try to correct the condition. Now, the man was in control of the wrestling match. He met Jacob for the purpose of challenging Jacob for combat. But that was really, there was a deeper purpose involved. A deeper purpose. His goal was not to fully vanquish Jacob, but to make him struggle until the breaking of the dawn. Until the time that he would be able to see him. And this is another point that we need to discuss, and probably in more detail, to test Jacob's pride and faith. And that's what we need to talk about, because that's the lessons, especially that for us, even when we look into the detail of the pride and the faith, the lessons from the wrestling match. The obvious test was of Jacob's endurance. Jacob was very successful in endurance to the end. So that was a successful aspect of Jacob. He was a man that had a lot of motivation in life to take some goal that he had and to carry it through. And so that was a successful aspect of his character. Now I want to discuss Jacob's injury for a moment. When you compare what happened to Job and what happened to Jacob, I'm going to compare the two for a moment. God allowed Satan to put very great distress on Job. And so it was done with God's permission, but Satan did it. But in the case of this injury in the wrestling match, Satan was not involved. It was God who did it, not Satan. So there's an interesting distinction. Of course, Job suffered a whole lot more. But Jacob had the injury and it lasted for the rest of his life. So there's an interesting distinction in terms of Satan's involvement with Job, God's involvement with Jacob. But it was God who did it. And he did it by plan, by purpose. He did it. And there was a certain test involved with Jacob in that. A certain test involved with Jacob in that whole thing. So I will not ask the question now, why did God injure Jacob? Why did he do it? And really, there's two parts to the answer. And I want to read through a part of one of the Psalms of David to explain the first part of the reason why he did it. And I'm going to read, and you could go to a lot of different scriptures to point this out, but I want to focus on just this one area. Psalm 39, verses 9 through 11. And here again, I look very carefully at the Hebrew, and I'm going to translate it in a way that helps to bring out exactly what it means. Psalm 39, verses 9 through 11. It says, King David is saying in the psalm, I was put to silence. I do not open my mouth. And it doesn't say to complain, but my italics is to complain. I do not open my mouth to complain. Because it was you, and the you is referring to Yahweh. It was you who did it. Who did it? You did it to me, David. And that's...
Is there prophetic in Christ?
Well, no. In the sense that... No, in the sense that the psalm is talking about David's relationship with Yahweh. Now, if you want to think of Yahweh as being Jesus before his human birth, you could think of it that way if you like. There's nothing wrong with thinking of it that way.
When he was in the place where they were beating him and stuff, he didn't answer that question.
No, it didn't have to do with that. No, it wasn't David acting as if he was Christ in the future. It was not for that reason. No, and it says why in verses 10 and 11. It gives me an answer in verses 10 and 11 of why he said it. Another, I'll read verse 39, verse 9 again, and then 10 and 11. I was put to silence. I do not open my mouth to complain, because it was you, Yahweh, who did it to me. Now, you'll see what in verses 10 and 11. Remove your plague from me. I am suffering by the stroke of your hand. In other words, he knew that God was hurting him. He knew, but it was God who was hurting him. He knew he was suffering by the stroke of the hand of God. Then in verse 11, when with rebuke you correct a man for iniquity, you make his beauty dissolve like a moth eats. Doesn't say eats my italics again. You have made his beauty dissolve like a moth eats. Surely every man is vapor. In other words, what he's pointing out, you know, The main sin that is pointed out in the scriptures about David, King David, was the fact that he was guilty of murder, Uriah the Hittite, and adultery with Bathsheba. But there's other sins in David's life that the scripture doesn't bring out. David had two sons that committed rebellion against him. Absalom is the main one, but then before his death, near his death, another one was involved. So he had rebellious children. And what does that tell you about him? It tells you that he did not do a good job at child rearing. And so you could surmise that there were a lot of things that David did that were wrong. He was very, very poor at child rearing. So the scripture doesn't bring out all of David's sins, but he obviously did. Because Psalm 39, verses 9 through 11, pointed out that for a while, God put a plague on David because of some sin that he did. And it is clear from the psalm that God does punish people because of sin. He catches their attention. That's the truth. You can read about the same thing in the book of Hebrews chapter 12, that God punishes like a father punishes his children. And so it's a truth of the Scripture. So sometimes we need to examine ourselves. Sometimes we need to examine ourselves and pray, what's going on in my life? What am I doing wrong? How can I improve? And these things in our life are something that we have to think about. It's part of the lesson of the lessons of the wrestling match. Now I want to go to the second part of the reason of the injury to Jacob. Why? Well, the question is, what did Jacob do that was wrong? That's the question. Because that's why the injury came. The first part of the answer of why the injury is because of how God deals with us. But the second is, specifically now, what did Jacob do that was wrong? That's what we need to look behind the scenes, behind the curtain, so to speak. Now, the limping was taking away some of Jacob's beauty. Because Jacob, I'll tell you this, Jacob must have been a very good wrestler. He must have been a good wrestler. Otherwise, he wouldn't have a wrestling match with somebody he didn't even know. He must have been a champion wrestler. And so he probably had a great deal of pride. He had a great deal of pride. He says, who dares to challenge me in a wrestling match? Nobody can beat me, a good wrestler. And so here comes somebody wanting to challenge him for a wrestling match. He says, that's going to be a great time for me. I'm going to wrestle this guy to the ground. He's going to give up. And so pride was one of the problems of Jacob. He didn't even ask, what reputation do you have as a wrestler? He didn't question him. He immediately said, you want to wrestle? Have at it. And so he must have been a good wrestler, and he had a lot of pride in his physical ability. Nothing can harm me. And so he was real gung-ho about it. He had so much pride. During the whole wrestling match, went on for hours, he never called upon God for any help in the wrestling match. He could do it all himself. He didn't need any help. See? That's the opposite attitude to what King David had. King David's attitude was totally different. Whenever he went into battle, he prayed about it. And he knew that God would be his helper. And God helped him. And so I'm going to contrast King David with Jacob. That there's a big contrast between them. I want to take some time now to discuss scriptures that show what kind of faith Jacob had. And so this is a very important aspect of what I'm going to have to say. See, faith has many different faces, many, many aspects to it. And there's a certain aspect of faith that King David had that Jacob did not have. Jacob did not have. And so I'm going to go now to, I'm going to read from a certain portion of Genesis to get to see some of the aspect of the faith of Jacob. So I'm going to read first, beginning in Genesis chapter 28, at verses 12 through 22. Verses 12 through 22. There's a little bit less light here than there is where I was sitting. And so, I need to... there's light. Well, I think I'm going... the lights are not right above me. They're a little bit over. Okay. I could see it a little bit better now. Okay. Genesis chapter 28 and verse 12. I can see it well enough now. I can see it well enough now. I can hold the Bible better. Okay. Oh. Look, I'm okay now. I'm okay. Stop struggling with the lights. Okay, then he, Jacob, dreamed a dream. He dreamed. And behold, a ladder was set up on the earth in the dream, and its top reached to heaven. And there the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And so this is what's commonly called Jacob's ladder. And Jacob's ladder and the dream of the angels coming up and down, that was really a picture of the fact, as will be pointed out later in the dream as we continue reading, that angels are here to help people, to intervene in their lives. And so this was a picture given to Jacob that he would be helped in his life by angels. In other words, they're going to come down from God, and they're going to be helping him in his life down on earth where he is. And so he saw the angels coming up and down as a picture of that he was going to be helped in his life. Okay. It says in verse 13, and behold, Yahweh stood above it, above the ladder, and said, I am the Lord, Yahweh, the God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, and that land he was in at that time, was part of what became Israel, the promised land. He was in part of the promised land. The land on which you lie, I will give to you and your descendants. And so that statement that I will give it to you and your descendants implied that he was going to be alive for a long time, that he was going to have children, and that they were going to be in that land, and they were going to have that land for themselves. So it was a promise that he was making. I will give to you and your descendants. Also, your descendants shall be as the dust of the earth. So he's going to have many progeny. You shall spread abroad to the west and the east and the north and the south. And in you and in your seed, all the families of the earth will be blessed. And of course, that's a reference to Christ. And so he had this wonderful, wonderful promise made to him in the dream by God. Verse 15, behold, I am with you. Now that statement, I am with you, is similar to what he said to Moses. He said to Moses, I am with you. He said to Joshua, I am with you. Like I was with Moses, I will be with you. And he said the same thing to Jacob. The same thing as he said to Moses, the same thing that he said to Joshua, he said to Jacob, I am with you, and I will keep you wherever you go. In other words, everything that you do, every place you go, I'm going to be with you, and I'm going to keep you. You have nothing to worry about, he was saying. I'm going to be with you, and we'll bring you back to this land. In other words, he was on the way to find a wife. And he was beginning on the journey to find a wife. And he was told this. I'm going to be with you. I'm going to keep you wherever you go and bring you back again. In other words, to the land here. For I will not leave you until I have done what I have spoken to you. And so he really told him, he's got nothing to worry about. Then Jacob awoke from his sleep and he said, surely Yahweh is in this place. And I did not know it. And he was afraid. And he said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. And this is the gate of heaven. Because the angels are coming up and down. And this is the gate that leads up to heaven. So he saw this as being a miracle in his life. And he recognized it as a miraculous thing. Then Jacob rose early in the morning, and he took the stone that he had put at his head. Boy, I wonder if he didn't have at least a cushion on the stone. I never slept on a rock. And he set it up as a pillar And he poured oil on the top of it. And he called the name of the place Bethel. And Beth means house, and El is God. So it's house of God. He called the name of the place house of God, Bethel. But the name of that city had been Luz previously. Then Jacob made a vow. Now this is a very, very interesting vow, and it shows something about his faith. So we just listened very carefully. We saw that promise that was made to him. He recognized it as the house of God. He recognized it as a miracle, a dream. And now notice he starts out this vow, if. Now the very word if shows doubt. It shows doubt. If. Now look what the if has to be followed with. If God will be met with me. But he just said I'm going to be with you. And so he says, if God will be with me. And keep me in the way that I'm going. He just said I'm going to keep you everywhere you go. So he says, if God will be with me. And keep me in the way that I'm going. And give me bread to eat and clothing to put on. But he just said, I'm going to take care of you. So that I come back to my father's house in peace. But he already told them that you're going to be here and I'm going to give the land to you and your descendants. But he kept saying, if this. He already told them he was going to do all those things. Then, only if all of that happens, then Yahweh will be my God. So, you have to ask yourself, what kind of faith did he have? Well, it must not have been very strong faith. And this stone, which I have set as a pillar, shall be God's house. If only if all that happens, then it will come true that it will be God's house. In other words, he wasn't really believing it very much. And all that you give me, I will surely give a tenth to you. But he wasn't going to do that, not until all that happened. Not until all that happened. And so, you almost have to laugh at the degree of his faith. Okay, now I want to go to Genesis chapter 31 and verse 13. Genesis chapter 31 and verse 13. Okay. In verse 13 it says, I am the God of Bethel. He's reminding Jacob. I am the God of Bethel. You remember Bethel, where you named that place? Well, I'm that God. Where you anointed the pillar and where you made a vow to me. Now arise, get out of this land and return to the land of your family. In other words, he had been there 20 years. He had married Rachel and Leah. He had children. And so this happened for 20 years. And he had gotten so used to the environment. In a natural way of thinking, he would never want to go back from where he came. But he was told that he would be coming back in that dream that he had before he left on his way. And so he was being reminded here. He was being reminded over here by Yahweh to go back and return now. And so he was given a command to do it. And he recognized he was being blessed. He remembered the vow that he made. He remembered the dream. And so he knew that, like it or not, he was going to have to go back. Even after being there for 20 years and having two wives. And so he had the courage, the endurance, to carry out what God wanted him to do, regardless of the wishy-washiness of his faith. Regardless of that. Now, I want to go to Genesis 31, where we are, and read verse 19. Verse 19 is an interesting verse. In verse 19, it says, Now Laban had gone to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the household idols that were her father's. Rachel had stolen the household idols that were her father's. In other words, her father, Laban, was not worshiping Yahweh. He was worshiping pagan deities that he had in the house. And Rachel, who had been known Jacob for 20 years, first married Leah and then Rachel, because Leah was the older one. I don't want to get too sidetracked and get into that. But the fact of the matter is that Jacob, if he had strong faith, would have taught Rachel and Leah to put aside those idols of her fathers. You know, obviously his faith was weak. He was so weak that his wife, one of his two wives, Rachel, wanted to steal idols of her fathers. And so that is also a reflection on Jacob's faith, that he didn't really teach his wives well about Yahweh. So that's a telling thing about Jacob himself. Now let's go to Genesis 32 and read verses 6 through 12. We're studying Jacob's faith. Genesis 32, starting in verse 6. Now, what happened is he's on the way back. He's on the way back to the promised land. And he knows that one of the reasons he fled was to get married, but the other reason was because he had stolen Esau's birthright. And Esau was angry with him, and he was afraid of Esau. And so he sent messengers in advance of him to find out the attitude of Esau, his brother, after being away from him for 20 years. And so this is where we pick up. The messengers come back from Esau. Now, in verse 6, it says, "Then the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, 'We came to your brother Esau, and he also is coming to meet you. And 400 men are with him.' So Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed." Now, God told him, "I'm going to be with you wherever you go, and I'm going to keep you." So what right did he have to be afraid? He was promised protection. So Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, and he divided the people that were with him, and the flocks and the herds and the camels, into two companies. And he said, "If Esau comes to the one company and attacks it, then the other company which is left will escape." You see his faith. Then Jacob said, "O God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac, Yahweh who said to me, 'Return to your country and to your family, and I will deal with you.'" And then he said, "I am not worthy of the least of the mercies and of all the truth which you have shown your servant." See, he did recognize that he was being blessed by God, and he admitted it here. "For I crossed over this Jordan with my staff, and now I have become two companies. Deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau. For I fear him, I fear him, lest he come and attack me and the mother with the children. For you said, 'I will surely treat you well and make your descendants as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude.'" And so he reminded God what God had told him in that dream. When the angels were coming up and down the ladder, he reminded God what God said. But in the vow, he said, "If you do this." And he was fearful. He was fearful. And this reminds me of verse 1 of Psalm 27, which is what I'm going to read now. King David's psalm, and he said this: "Yahweh is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? Yahweh is the strength of my life. Of whom then shall I be afraid?" So King David went into battle. And he went into battle knowing that God would help him into battle. And King David lived into old age. King David lived into old age, and he never had any lasting wound. He never had any lasting wound. And all of the battles that King David had, lived into old age, never had a lasting wound, because he had the faith that took away fear. He depended on God for help. That's what he had. Now, there are some important scriptures that show what it takes to have the protection of God. And I want to read some of those now. And this is a very, very important one of the lessons of the whole wrestling match. I'm going to read Psalm 18, verse 30. As for the Almighty, His way is blameless. This is Psalm 18, verse 30. The word of Yahweh is tested. He is a shield to all who take refuge in Him. And take refuge is one of the words for faith. It's Strong's number 2620, casa. Casa is a very important word for faith because it's the kind of faith that causes you to take refuge in Him. Through everything that happens, any adversity, any struggle, any trial you're going through, you go to Him for refuge. And it says, it's a promise, He is a shield to all who take refuge in Him. In other words, there is a requirement. There's a requirement for getting the shield. And it's the shield of faith, spoken about in Ephesians 6. The shield of faith is based upon faith. Faith. The kind of faith that takes refuge in Him through every adversity. To have that same faith that King David had in Psalm 27, verse 1. Whom then shall I be afraid of? Because He is my shield. Now let's go to Psalm 33, verses 20 and 21. Psalm 33, verses 20 and 21. Our soul waits for Yahweh. He is our help and our shield. For our heart shall rejoice in Him because, here's the reason, because we have trusted in His holy name. And the word name means character, His character traits, His compassion, His loving kindness. And that character is what it means when it says we have trusted in His holy name. His grace, He shows favor, grace to us. And so when we trust in His holy name, we trust in His character traits that He exhibits to us. And that's why we can rejoice that He's our help and our shield, as it says in verse 20. So this is Psalm 33, verses 20 and 21. Important, and it shows that when you have faith in His character toward you, then He will be your shield. But that means you have to trust that He will exhibit His character to you. And now I want to read Psalm 28, verse 7. Psalm 28, verse 7. Yahweh is my strength and my shield. My heart trusted in Him, and I am helped. Therefore, my heart greatly rejoices, and with my song I will praise Him. And the last of this group of scriptures, Proverbs chapter 30, verse 5. And Proverbs, this is no doubt written by Solomon, King David's son. Proverbs 30, verse 5. Every word of the Almighty is refined by fire. Every word of Yahweh is refined by fire. He is a shield to those who take refuge. That's that same Hebrew word, kasa. He is a shield to all those who take refuge in Him. And so taking refuge is one of the faces of faith. It's not only obeying Him, but it's taking refuge in Him. He's the shield to all those who take refuge in Him. So the promise that He would be your shield is based upon your faith that shows that you're going to go to Him whenever there's a problem. You're not going to try to say, oh, I'm going to solve the problem all myself. And there were many times I struggled with computer program bugs, and I prayed out to God when I was up half the night trying to find the bug for the program, saying, God, help me find this bug. You can make it short. I don't have to be up all night on this, do I? And it's actually partly a version of Joel 2:32, where he says, whoever calls upon the name of Yahweh, and that's his character, shall be saved, shall be saved. Whoever calls upon the name of Yahweh shall be saved. That doesn't mean you pronounce the name. It means you call upon his character. You call upon the character of him. And also, Hebrews 11, verse 6 says, without faith, it's impossible to please him. Without faith, it's impossible to please him. And so, with Jacob's attitude about faith, God was not so well pleased because he had doubts. He said, if you carry out what you said, then I'll give you a tenth. So, what we're seeing is that Jacob's pride and his lack of completeness of faith was displeasing to Yahweh. And that is the reason he was injured. That's the reason why. So he had something to think about from that point on in his life. He knew God did it. He knew God had the power to injure him. And he did it. And he had a limp to remember that wrestling match for the rest of his life. Now, the meaning of the name Israel. It's an interesting thing. I've looked at a number of different places, commentaries, and so forth. And four different meanings were proposed. But only one of them is a blessing. Only one of the meanings given for the name Israel is a blessing. And that is what it means. And I'm not going to tell you the three proposals that are not blessings. But I'm going to tell you the one that is. Israel means he will rule with El. It means he will rule with El. And that's a blessing. It's a promise that he will rule with El. But the fulfillment would be far into the future. Fulfillment would be far into the future. But another blessing of that was the preservation of the scriptures. Because it says in Romans chapter 3, verses 1 through 3, what is the blessing of circumcision? What is such a good thing about being a Jew? And the answer is given in Romans 3. Unto them was entrusted the oracles of God. Unto them was entrusted the oracles of God. And that was a blessing. It was a blessing. And that's part of rulership with God. Part of rulership with God is preserving the scriptures. Because he rules through the scriptures. And they were ruling with him by preserving the scriptures. And so, this is a promise, Israel, that he will rule with God. And that is a blessing of Israel, and that's the meaning of the word. He will rule with God. And so, that is a beautiful thing. Jacob, that had a meaning of he will grasp the heel. And he grasped the heel of the firstborn, his brother Esau. He grasped the heel. And that was a physical thing, but this was a spiritual blessing that would carry on for eternity.